Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go!
Hello and welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. People messing with the studio, man. We can't get this right, all right? 2 days in a row, for different reasons on different sides of the glass, we have not been able to start the show correctly here today. Welcome back, Mitch. He's back in the saddle. Tyler is with me. And today we will talk with Mitch Light from the Athlon College Football Preview magazine. So we've heard from Phil Steele. Now we'll hear from what I always consider like the second most major college football preview magazine, Athlon, Mitch Light, who is also the sideline reporter for Vanderbilt football. So not only the scoop on the Big 12 and K-State, but Vandy. They have an interesting take on Texas, which we're going to talk about here in the open, and I think I am going to make some of you mad. Of course, today we'll have Jabroni of the Week, and we'll squeeze in some more K-State football talk at 5:10 as well. We're only with you until 5:30, so Jabroni of the Week at like 5:25. We hand you off to the Royals at that point in time. They are in Detroit, 6:10 for the first pitch tonight, 5:30 for pregame coverage here on K-Man. We had a rough show yesterday, Mitch. I thought the show kind of sucked. There was not much to talk about. We had a guest in Mitch Holtis, who, understandably, busy guy. Like, he was like 45 minutes late. You weren't here. We couldn't bounce things off of you. Like, you left and the whole thing fell apart. That's basically what I'm trying to say. So I'm hoping that today we get back on track and things are a little bit better.
Things will not fall apart today. I'll make sure that this show not only goes off smoothly, it'll stay well constructed. People will stay on their toes. We won't have anybody calling in late because I will text them and say, hey, where are you at?
The where you at text, huh? But you know what they're going to say back? Who dis? That's what you're going to get back.
Probably thought it was weird. Somebody other than Mitch from K-Man was calling him on the
that could be
on the K-Man line.
No mention of Maudo Sala in today's show. And also, we have Jabroni of the Week. So hopefully you have that lined up and ready to go.
Well, yeah, I tell you what. Maudo Sala can make any appearance in any game sports update that you want, Mitch. I will give you that permission to continue to try and nail that name. Get it down.
He won't be here today.
Okay. No Maudo Sala today. We are going to talk some WWE as well because things went about as I predicted with LeVar Ball. That's one of the things that everybody seems to be talking about. It's another day where there's hardly anything going on nationally at all, but I started looking into the Athlon football preview knowing that we were going to have Mitch Light on, and I am looking forward to talking to him. The biggest thing that I took away from seeing their Big 12 preview page is I think going to draw a lot of people's attention here. Number one in the Big 12, even despite Oklahoma losing Bob Stoops, they kept the Sooners there. Because if you go online to look at their preview of the Big 12, they put together a basic version of it, and it was after Bob Stoops had left. Even though the magazine was printed before Bob Stoops had left, they still go Oklahoma number one. But that's where the conventional wisdom stops. Because after that, number two is not Oklahoma State. Number two is not Kansas State. Number two is not TCU. Number two is not West Virginia. Number two, well, it's the owners of the greatest uniform in college football, the all-whites, the Texas Longhorns, at number two in the Big 12, according to Athlon. And
I know that everybody listening just said, oh, good grief, which is basically what I said.
Well, and yes, everybody is going to immediately have that reaction because, one, we'd love to make Texas the punching bag here. We own Texas. I think it makes everybody feel better to take some shots at Texas, and I get it. I understand. And people fall into this trap seemingly every year, and they have, at least since 2009, when Texas played for a national championship. They've been not nearly to that level since then, and every year you want to predict them there because of the talent that they have and the logo on the side of the helmet. But I will stick up for Texas in this regard. The more I think about it, Texas has two things that they have not had for a while. One for sure, the other one left up more for interpretation. But I think they're the two most important things that you could have if you get just two entities here in college football. That would be, one, Texas has a quarterback, and two, Texas debatably has a head coach. Now, we'll get to the head coach part later because I do think that's the weaker That's the weaker part of the argument here. But I don't think there's really any arguing that Texas has the best quarterback right now that they have had since 2009 when Colt McCoy helped lead them to the national championship game. David Ash, Javon Sneed, Case McCoy, Jevon Sneed, I guess it is, Case McCoy, Tyrone Swoops, Jerod Hurd, those are the quarterbacks they've been rolling out there until they got to Shane Buechel last year, who was a true freshman, completed 60% of his passes, 2,900-plus yards, 21 touchdowns, 11 picks. Pretty good. It's pretty good for a freshman. This guy looks like the real deal. And the one thing they have really always been missing is a quarterback. The reason they get projected as highly as they do year in, year out, is because they have a baseline talent level that's almost always going to be there. On defense, for the most part, on offense, they have struggled somewhat at the skill positions, but it's been the quarterback. That's the thing that they've been missing. Now they have the quarterback to go along with the baseline talent level that's there seemingly every year. And what do people say when Charlie Strong left? He even said it himself. I baked the cake. Whoever it's going to be, now it's Tom Herman, comes in and is going to try and apply the frosting to this thing. Meaning, I have a lot of talent that's already here. He just has to come in and take it wherever it's going
to
go.
Yes, but before you put the frosting on, you got to have the ingredients to make the frosting. And I don't think that they quite have that yet. They're definitely going to get it. You can see what they're doing on the recruiting trail. I do believe in Tom Herman down the road, but I don't think that they quite have everything in place yet. They really have struggled a lot more on the defensive side of the ball in recent years than people seem to realize, and I don't think that having a quarterback totally will overcome that. So I think that they're going to be a better team this year, but second in the Big 12 with the quality of teams that are at the top, I cannot see that at all.
I agree with you that second in the Big 12 above an Oklahoma State team, where that program, as we've discussed on this show recently, is just Mr. Reliable.
Maybe the best offense in college football this
right.
year.
I mean, they have a very good version of themselves coming back this year, and they are just reliable, steady, basically year in, year out right now under Mike Gundy, a la K-State in the late 90s, early 2000s. You can almost always pencil them into one of the top three spots in the Big 12 conference. So expecting Texas to make that jump over them this year, I do think is too strong. But I also think, at the same time, the easy thing to do, the initial reaction, the piling on reaction, especially to K-State fans and other, really to nine other fan bases in the conference, is to say, well, we go through this joke of a thing every year that Texas is going to be so much better. Texas will not be better. They're going to be a 500 team. I do not think that is the case. They will be better than that, predominantly because of a quarterback. The head coach, we will talk about that a little bit at 5:10 to start the 5 o'clock hour, because I think that's where debate comes in. We're going to speak with Mitch Light. I know at least the general consensus from his magazine is that Tom Herman is awesome and great. You can find opinions on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as that goes, so I'll be curious to hear what he says. I know the consensus there, they love him, and that is why they go ahead and take that thing and slam dunk it, put Texas up there at number two in the conference. So we will talk with Mitch Light from the Athlon College Football Preview magazine next. Might get angry, depending on what he has to say about Texas and K-State. You're listening to The Game. Welcome back into The Game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner all with you here. Mitch has Jabroni of the Week at 5:25. We're off early today. Royals pregame at 5:30. 6:10 for the first pitch. Royals and Tigers start a three-game series. Alluded to this in the open, but we talk some college football now with Mitch Light. He is with Athlon Sports. The Athlon College Football Preview magazine is on newsstands now. And as we discussed earlier, one thing, Mitch, and appreciate the time in joining us, that I think pops off the page when you look at Big 12 projections from your magazine. The thing that I start with is the fact that you do have Texas as number two in the conference. Especially around here, people like to take their shots at Texas, and I think the perception is people overhype them every single year. So I'll start you off there. Why the extra love for the Longhorns this year?
You are not the first person to ask me this. And you know what? In preparation, I actually looked up. I said, you know, what did we do with Texas last year? Because, you know, we get the same thing about UCLA, and I'll get back to Texas. Not to change the subject. You know, why did UCLA pick second in the Pac-12 South? Why all the UCLA love? Well, actually, last year we picked Texas eighth in the Big 12, I believe. Let me see. Yeah, no, seventh in the Big 12. So I went out there. It's not like we jump on the bandwagon every year. Big believer for this year. Big believer in Tom Herman. You know, college coaching, college sports, basketball, football, coaching matters a lot. We see across the landscape what a coach can do in year one. We saw what Tom Herman did in year one at Houston. In fact, his year one was better than his year two. I think he's inheriting a roster with good talent, not great talent. And I just think that kind of the culture there has deteriorated. You look how they finished last season very poorly. I just think you'll see a jolt in their performance, and he's got enough talent to turn the corner. Now, I think Oklahoma is a clear number one team. 2 through 6 is pretty even. You know, Texas, I'll go through down through TCU, and you might even want to include Baylor in there. I'm not. We've got them 7, so I'll go 2 through 6. So it wouldn't surprise me if any of those teams get second. Just think, again, Tom Herman, I think Bouchel showed enough last year. I'm not sure he's the answer, the perfect fit for Tom Herman long-term, but just think that they'll have a nice turnaround in year one under Tom Herman.
We're talking right now with Mitch Light from the Athlon College Football Preview Magazine, which is on newsstands now. You know, it's interesting you say that about Shane Bouchel, because I'm actually with you to an extent on Texas. I'm not sure about second, but I do think they will be much better. And the biggest thing I think is that they've always had this baseline level of talent, but they've been missing a quarterback. I mean, you run through the list of quarterbacks that they've had since Colt McCoy, and it's just awful. Now it does appear that they have the guy, and that is a big part of why I would believe that they would make a jump this year.
Yeah, and I think Tom Herman's a good enough offensive coach that he will cater his offense to Shane Bouchel's skills. He wasn't exact. You know, Houston, he did what he had with, you know, the great quarterback with Greg Ward there. So I think he'll tailor that. You know, they get Chris Warren back, who, you know, was the primary ball carrier last year until he got hurt. And there's a lot of good defensive parts there. The front seven, you know, Charlie Strong recruited very well there. So I think they've got a lot of parts there. So, you know, a lot of pressure on Bouchel. You know, we all remember that week one Monday night performance against Notre Dame where he looked phenomenal. You know, he was inconsistent the rest of the year. So I think he's the answer at quarterback. But, you know, like you said, at Texas, we're never sure because they've had a lot of big-name guys that have not lived up to the hype.
Mitch, how big of a gap do you feel like there is between the top of the league and some of these other teams we're discussing at Texas, Oklahoma State, K-State? I mean, do you think that K-State is one of the more likely teams to be able to sneak in there for a Big 12 championship game spot?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I think you could. I think Oklahoma is the team to beat. And I do a college football podcast, and we were talking about this last week. And, you know, before the coaching change there, I would have put Oklahoma at an 80% chance to win the league, and now maybe I'll say 7%. So, I mean, I still think they're the team to beat, but, you know, you do have a first-year coach. But, you know, there's a lot to like about Texas. A lot of people love Oklahoma State this year. I like them offensively. I think they've got some issues on the defensive line. Kansas State, obviously a lot to like there. And then West Virginia, now that Will Grier is definitely eligible for the whole season, they're going to be good. I really like Justin Crawford at running back. And TCU, I'm not in love with. You know, we've got them pick 6. So, yeah, I think Kansas State clearly is a team that, you know, again, I don't think they're going to win the league, but if you told me that they finish 2nd and they go 7-2, wouldn't be surprised at all.
Mitch Light talking with us from Athlon's College Football Preview. What do you like the most about K-State? What gives you the confidence to say that they could finish up at the top 2 of the league?
I think the offense, I mean, I love Jesse Ertz at quarterback. There's something about dual-threat quarterbacks. And Kansas State obviously has had some good ones. I think in college football, it's so difficult offensively if you don't have a quarterback who can pick up yards, you know, with his legs. And there's degrees, obviously. You know, a guy who runs for 300 yards is a mobile quarterback who's a dual threat. Well, you know, Kansas State has one of the, I just looked this up, one of the 5 guys nationally last year that went for 1,000 yards rushing and passing. So I think, you know, he is a ideal fit for what they want to do there. Like the core of running backs they had last year, you know, it's a program that in years past has run the ball, but done so primarily or a lot with the quarterback. Well, last year they got their running backs involved there. You guys probably talk about this. You might get sick of it. There's a national perspective on Kansas State and they're doing the little things. But, you know, last year they dominated field position, you know, plus 5.1 per drive, which was, you know, 18th in the country. They won the turnover, you know, battle again. So just doing the little things combined with a veteran offensive core, I think puts Kansas State in position to be successful again.
Mitch, there's been a lot of turnover in the last couple of years with the coaches in the Big 12. And looking at what the league is this year, do you think there's a chance of some of these teams underperforming to an extent that we could see more changes, looking specifically at a West Virginia, Texas Tech, something like that?
Well, I think Texas Tech, I do think we're going to see a coaching change. I don't see them being really any better. I mean, they were what they were last year with one of the best players in school history at the quarterback position. And there's no sign that they're getting better defensively. I think they'll take a step back offensively. You know, Cliff Kingsbury's the favorite son, and, you know, they don't want to fire him. But, you know, just the way the rest of the team, you know, most of the teams in the league seem to be trending upward, I think it's going to be hard for Texas Tech for him to hold on to his job. You know, I think West Virginia will be good this year. So, sure, you know, Dana Holgorsen, if they implode, although, you know, he just got a contract extension. So, but I think they're set up. So, I you know, looking at the ledger there, I don't think there's going to be, right now, my guess would be there would be only one change, and that would be Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech.
We're talking right now with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports and the College Football Preview magazine. To me, the two toughest teams to read in the league are TCU and Baylor. Baylor, for the obvious, everything that has happened there and a coaching change. But TCU, it's like, do we trust Kenny Hill to get them back on track at quarterback? How difficult are those two teams of a read for you?
Yeah, no, I agree. Baylor is complete mystery. I mean, I think Matt Rule's a really good coach, but they lost, you know, they still have some skill, but they lost a lot of good players, you know, the last couple of years. I think he will get them back on track. I don't think we'll see them being a top 10 team or top 15 team. I think they can be a solid top 25 program. TCU, I'm with you. I mean, Kenny Hill, they seem to have kind of, you know, renewed their vows with Kenny Hill after the spring. You know, there's some talk about that job being open, but I think, you know, they got their one of trust in him that they're going to go with him. You know, defensively, they took a step back last year. You know, a lot of times we just say, oh, it's a Gary Patterson defense. They'll get it figured out, and I tend to agree, but there's no guarantee there. You know, they've lost, you know, Kevontae Turpin got hurt last year. He's coming back. He was great as a freshman. So just a lot of unknowns there. You know, you just, if you're comparing them to like a Kansas State or West Virginia, some of those other teams in that 2 through 5 or 6 range, I just think there's more unknowns with TCU, hence we've got them pick 6.
Well, one of K-State's, they will be the toughest non-conference test that they have is going to Vanderbilt. A lot of fans looking forward to not only a trip to Nashville, but just playing an SEC team there. You also spend some time on the sidelines with Vanderbilt football for their radio broadcasts. What's going to be the follow-up this year to Derek Mason taking the Commodores to the Independence Bowl last year after finishing pretty hot?
Well, I was on a radio show in Omaha the other day, and they know I'm a Vanderbilt grad, and I guaranteed on the air 11-1 with a close loss to Alabama, the only setback. But then I asked them if that was actually on the radio if we were just talking. So now I'm kidding there, obviously. So, you know, big breakthrough offensively towards the end of the year for Derek Mason's team. Vanderbilt went 6-6, and if you know anything about the Commodores under Derek Mason, good defense, horrible offense in the first 2+ years, but ended the regular season with 38 points against Ole Miss and 45 against Tennessee. Here's a stat that was just staggering. Vanderbilt scored 11 offensive touchdowns in its last two SEC games after scoring a total of 5 offensive touchdowns in its first 6.
Wow.
So the question is going forward. Now, the bowl game, they took a step back against a good NC State defense. It came out after the fact that Kyle Shermer, the quarterback, got hurt on the first drive. Didn't really tell anyone. You know, you read out of that what you want, whether, you know, excuses coming from the program or not. But there seems to be reasons why the offense didn't play well in the bowl game. So will that carry over? If it does, this can be a pretty good team. If it doesn't, if they revert back to their you know, form from the previous 2.5 years with losing Zach Cunningham, that outstanding linebacker, program could take a step back. I think it's a bowl team again. I think our projections were 6-6, picked them 6 in the SEC East. Definitely intriguing matchup with Kansas State. I think a lot of Vanderbilt fans are looking forward to that game because it's just not a program that Vanderbilt's played in probably 3 decades. So it'll be a fun game, and I'm sure Nashville's a great town. I'm not a native, but I've been here for about 25 years, and Kansas State fans will have a great time visiting.
Yeah, Mitch, before I let you go, what are the go-to things you got to do, maybe outside of just the obvious touristy things that everybody will think of going to Nashville?
Yeah, well, I mean, downtown is just is great. I mean, if anybody watched the NHL playoffs, you know what's going on downtown. Just a lot of great music venues. And do your research. You know, just Broadway is kind of where all the honky tonks are. Those are definitely fun to see. But there's a place called the Station Inn, which isn't entirely downtown. It's great bluegrass music. There's just a ton of kind of off the beaten path places like that to watch music. A lot of great parks. If you don't want to go hiking if the weather is good and stuff. So, yeah, just a ton of stuff to do. So, you know, make a long weekend out of it and have a good time. I don't know if the Titans are playing the next day, but a lot of times visiting fans will come. In fact, 2 years ago, Missouri played here, and then the next day, the Kansas City Chiefs played the Titans. So there's a ton of people from Missouri for that doubleheader.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We'll have to check that schedule. I hadn't thought of that. Mitch, appreciate the insight, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon, maybe with the game coming up. We'll talk to you in September leading up to the game.
Yeah, that sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. There is Mitch Light with the Athlon College Football Preview Magazine. You can check it out on newsstands now. I've seen it out there for quite a while. Appreciate Mitch stopping by. That really was doubly beneficial for us, finding out that we got a Vandy connection there now, too. All right, Mitch has Jabroni of the Week. Mitch Fortner does at 5:25 before we get out of here at 5:30. But coming up next, I think we're going to have to resurrect the Wacky and Stormy personas for some hot takes on some cold topics. This is The Game. Back in here on The Game, John, Tyler, Mitch, whole crew back here with you. Only until 5:30 today, Royals pregame going to kick us off a half hour early each of the next 2 days. Get back into the Texas talk at 5:10. Appreciate Mitch Light coming by. I think he echoed some of what I was saying about Texas and why I do think that they will be better this year, but not the slam dunk second of the Big 12 that they have projected. Give you the rest of that at 5:10, plus some K-State football talk that we did not quite get to yesterday when we fit Mitch Holtis in the second hour of the show. For right now, man, just like we said yesterday, there's not a lot going on at the moment. I'm staring at a picture of Tim Tebow on the front page of ESPN.com right now, but in going through and doing some show prep today, looking through all the major websites, it's like there's just nothing of substance really. You know, if you want to go talk about the Chiefs and John Dorsey, that's fine. The Royals were off yesterday. They are playing well. But you try and go find interesting things and what's happening nationally. I was listening to some national sports talk today, and it's like the only thing going on there is everybody talking about John McEnroe and Serena Williams, which I find to be a pretty ridiculous story.
Yes.
Not just because it's like, I mean, men's tennis, women's tennis, they're virtually different sports. Serena Williams, if you're going to talk tennis as a whole, I think most would argue is the most accomplished tennis player of all time. Who cares? Like, why are we trying to make this cross-sport comparison here? It's just screams, we need some content. We need something to talk about. By the way, John McEnroe was just asked a question. He wasn't going out of his way to put that out there. I just find the whole thing, I don't really have a strong feel either way. It's just like the whole thing is dumb. The whole thing is dumb, and that's what we're talking about nationally here. But if you go to ESPN.com, ESPN and their leftist agenda, here is what they are pumping out today. Three of the top six stories that I saw on their top headline section on the right side of the page, there were three NBA stories loosely related to the MVP award that was given out last night, the overall NBA awards. I know nobody here cares about that, but here's what the rest of it was. Here is story number one. Lala, I don't know, is it better to explain who Lala is or just read the headline with no explanation if you don't know who Lala is? I think I'm just going to read it, assuming that you don't know who Lala is. Lala, Carmelo prefers to stay close to Sun. Here's another headline. Vince Young calls Ryan Fitzpatrick garbage. More specifically, Young, garbage Fitzpatrick playing, not me. And number three, this might be my favorite one, Bueno Deal, restaurant signs Taco Charlton.
The former Michigan football player. Right?
Well, we're not doing explanations here. This is if you're pulling up the page,
yeah,
that's what you're finding. So,
top headlines,
man, top headlines for June 27th. So here is first I'll go through it explicitly. So Lala is a former MTV VJ, think DJ but VJ, that would be music videos, video jockey. She is. Are they married still? I don't know. She's a love interest of Carmelo Anthony. So she says Carmelo prefers to stay close to Sun. Vince Young is calling Ryan Fitzpatrick garbage, I guess, because Vince Young is out of the league and Ryan Fitzpatrick is still there playing quarterback. And then, yeah, Taco Charlton was a Michigan player who got drafted by the Cowboys, and it says Bueno Deal because he has signed an endorsement deal with Taco Bueno after literally after meeting with multiple different taco joints in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to try and figure out which one he was going to link up with, because he knew his name had that much value, which is kind of crazy to me. But here's what I want you guys to do. I'm going to have you both do this. That's right, Mitch. I'm going to have you both do this. I want you to give me off-the-cuff hot takes here on each of these stories. So I'm going to hit the wacky and stormy intro, and I need on these cold stories, I need some piping hot takes.
But I'm not wacky or stormy.
You are now.
Which one?
You can be stormy. I think Tyler, in this case, gets to be wacky.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
Cool with that? Okay. Now, we're going to go for story number one, Tyler. Story number one, Mitch. And then back and forth.
Ooh, all right.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Why is my... Skip Bayless doesn't have... I swear, whoever messes with the buttons here in the studio, man. All the streaming and hot takes you could ask for. Skip Bayless doesn't have on us. It's Wacky and Stormy on 730 The Sports Massacre. All right, Tyler. Lala says Carmelo prefers to stay close to his son. Hot take. Go.
I don't care about Carmelo Anthony. Give me Phil Jackson, put him in a spaceship, and fire him toward the sun. He is never going to lead the Knicks to the playoffs, let alone an NBA title. They are not even touching the Golden State Warriors next season. Give me a break.
Dude, that was strong. The bar has been set high,
How do I
Mitch.
Top that?
The bar has been set high. Here we go. All the screaming and hot takes you could ask for. Skip Bayless doesn't have on us. It's Wacky and Stormy on 730 The Sports Massacre. All right, Mitch. Lala, Carmelo prefers to stay close to son. Hot take.
Don't have one. Carmelo is doing the right fatherly thing. He wants to stay close to his son. Now, just because he screwed up and cheated on Lala still doesn't mean he shouldn't not get to see his son. Of course, he shouldn't see his wife because he screwed up. He committed adultery. But to see his son, he's still paying the bills, right? He's still working.
Yeah, Tyler wins this round, man. Your hot take is that adultery's bad? That was the hot take? He just sent him to the moon.
Phil Jackson going into the sun.
Okay, the sun, whatever. Here. Sun, moon.
It's a beautiful planet.
Rex Hudler thinks they're the same thing, so I'll just roll with it.
I just want to say I'm at a disadvantage here because I didn't know I was going to be part of this wacky or stormy thing.
I didn't know
he
either.
He didn't really know either.
Okay.
All right. Ready for topic number two. Let's go. All the screaming and
hot takes you could ask for. Do we need it every time?
Yes. Yes, it's like you're starting the show. Wacky and Stormy on 730 The Sports Massacre. Vince Young says Ryan Fitzpatrick is garbage. Tyler, go.
Oh, I thought Mitch had to go first.
Nope, hot take, go.
Oh, man. Well, Ryan Fitzpatrick is garbage, but I want to see what Vince Young could actually do in the league after hanging out in Canada for the last few years. You know, he's up there in Canada with all the people that said they were going to move there after the election. I don't care if Vince Young wants to come back to the U.S. and play for the Chiefs. He can play for the Chiefs if he wants to, and he can back up Patrick Mahomes, be third-string quarterback for KC.
Okay, Mitch, I feel like the door's cracked open there for you to win this round. All the screaming and hot takes you could ask for. Skip Bayless doesn't have on us. It's Wacky and Stormy on 730 The Sports Massacre. Vince Young says Ryan Fitzpatrick is garbage. Mitch, go.
If he's talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick currently in the NFL, then I would give Vince Young the equivalent of being the gum that was on the bottom of my shoe that I scraped off last weekend, because his time in the NFL was nothing short of garbage, and he's $1 million in debt. He spent $15,000 on at Cheesecake Factory yesterday that he didn't have, that I read earlier today. So if he's garbage, he has nothing to talk about, because what is he doing right now? He's not playing in the NFL. He didn't do his job for the Tennessee Titans when he was there. If you ask Titan fans, was he an embarrassment? Probably, because he didn't get them anyway. I mean, he was decent, but
keep going.
Well,
no,
I made
decent.
My point.
No decent. Yes, you did. I think
you
win that round.
He was definitely garbage.
All right, so it's 1-1 here in the hot takeoff. Whoever gets story number three here from ESPN's top headlines is going to win the hot take cold headlines battle here. Tyler, you ready this time? We're keeping the same order here.
Yeah.
All right.
All the screaming and hot takes you could ask for. Skip Bayless doesn't have on us. It's Wacky and Stormy on 7:30 The Sports Massacre.
All right, Bueno Deal. Restaurant signs Taco Charlton.
That's a good thing for him because he's not even setting foot at Jerry World for the Dallas Cowboys. This guy's a terrible player. He was bad in Michigan, played in a bad Big Ten. I don't want to hear a word about this. I do want to say that his name is probably the best that the Cowboys have, but they still have kind of the Zeke Elliott thing going on there. I think Taco Charlton would be best served as the spokesman for Taco Bell taking over for the Chihuahua than he would playing football.
Okay. All right. It's all right. It's okay. I felt like it started strong. I'm not sure about the Taco
Bell
finish.
I was
there.
Ready for the Phil Jackson thing. I was not ready for anything.
You were. I like
else.
Sending Phil Jackson to the sun or the moon or whatever it was. All right, Mitch. It's there for the taking.
All the screaming and hot takes you could ask for. Skip Bayless doesn't have on us. It's Wacky and Stormy on 7:30 The Sports Massacre.
All right. Bueno Deal. Restaurant signs Taco Charlton.
It's fine. Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl. Cowboys will win Super Bowl 52.
Mitch wins.
That's my hot take.
Yeah, Mitch wins the hot takeoff. Mitch wins the hot takeoff. That was good. I forgot you're a Cowboys fan. That was a great way to end that. That was an upset. I thought after that, man, that was a comeback. I'll tell you that much. An upset and a comeback because after that early lead, I mean, that was like a 28-0 first quarter. You had the Phil Jackson tape. Teed up and ready to go. Just sitting there, standing over it with the driver.
It's hard to come up with, you know, hot takes for cold topics. The Knicks are always interesting, but I could not care less about any of those other two stories.
No, I could care less about the Knicks. I don't know. Come on, the Taco Charlton one, I feel like that just had a world of possibilities.
After they win the Super Bowl this year, that'll be the least of his worries when it comes to endorsement deals. He'll be all right.
Was LeVar Ball to WWE for WWE? I think he may have been. It's coming up here on the game. We'll hop back into some football at 5:10. Look, I'm not predicting Texas to finish second in the Big 12, but I think Athlon's on the right path. They have the right thought. Maybe not the greatest execution with their Texas prediction of second in the league. Plus, will K-State have a 1,000-yard receiver this year? We actually got after a pretty good debate about that. For right now, Mitch, we were disappointed yesterday when we found out this news that you were not here to discuss this with, that LeVar Ball was going to be on Monday Night Raw at the Staples Center. I felt like this had the opportunity to replace the Johnny Idiot face quote from Seth Rollins, right? Seth Rollins?
Yeah.
The Johnny Idiot face over there is never going to win you a title talking about Johnny Manziel in Cleveland from Raw a couple of years ago. And I'm not sure that it really did that, but it certainly drew some headlines, and part of that was the youngest or younger son there that hopped on the live mic with some bad language. But for the most part, I thought LeVar Ball did what I expected him to do. I guess the theory is that Vince McMahon got frustrated with him and the way that he took everything and just tried to cut it off, get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that mean that he out WWE'd WWE? He was too much?
By being too real?
For WWE?
And
well,
not scripted enough?
What he did, yeah, he wasn't going by the script because, first of all, LeVar Ball is probably not one of those guys you can say, okay, here's a script, here's what I want you to do, and he's just going to follow it. I mean, we've seen him on ESPN. This guy is, I guess you could say, unpredictable. He could be irritating, but I mean, he's always going to entertain you in a way. And I thought he was actually decent at times. He was entertaining. He was kind of funny. He was ridiculous. He was belligerent. And then it kind of got weird when he took his shirt off and he was, you know, ready to lock up with The Miz, who was in the ring at the time.
Which, by the way, the fact that they rolled The Miz out there to go back and forth with him was awesome. I certainly appreciate
that. Was probably
that.
The right guy to do it.
I agree.
He's an L.A. guy now, and he calls himself a big movie star. He wants to be a part of the Big Baller Brand. But
does he really?
I could definitely tell. No. I mean, that was storyline. But right. I could definitely tell there was one big part of that script that LeVar Ball just wasn't getting to, and so that's why they had to probably call it quits early.
Well, here's a couple of the highlights. I think he did a lot of things pretty well. There was one that just really did not land and missed. I'll get to that in a second. But here are some of his back and forth with The Miz.
The Miz and Big Baller Brand partnership, it's like a dream come true.
Whoa. What you mean partnership? We only got three letters. What? Triple B's. We're not here for no partnership.
I understand triple B's and an M. I mean, I heard that you were here to announce a partnership with your favorite WWE superstar.
We was thinking more along the lines of somebody a little higher, like my son. You're a little too low for us right now.
I thought that was awesome. That part of the back and forth. The Miz almost won that, I thought, with his declaration of himself being a huge superstar. But I don't think everything was a total hit here for LeVar Ball. This one left something to be desired, not his greatest work.
Now we know what the Miz stands for. Misinterpreted zone.
Misinterpreted zone. I mean,
that's one of those things that he's just, words are just coming out of his mouth and he really doesn't.
Yeah, well, I get it, you know.
He doesn't know.
Off the cuff. It's what he does for the most part. But, you know, a lot of times it's better. That was too convoluted. There's too much going on there. That was not simplistic enough. Here's one more.
No, I don't want to deal with your kids, mouth. I want to deal with you because you do a lot of this, and all I want you to do is prove it.
Boy, you better stay in your lane.
Or what, LeVar?
Or the honey's on, and you the prey. Hey. Oh, boy, you making me shoot. Okay. Oh, put your clothes back on, Buckman. You ain't the only man holding my shirt off.
I assume that's when he took his shirt off.
Yeah. You know what's going to be really great? 15 years from now, when all of us are still doing this show, we're going to go inside the fort, and the storyline that we pitch to you is going to be LeVar Ball, and you're going to need to remember this stuff, Mitch.
I don't know. Does that even like register on the scale as a storyline? It's just like a one-time novelty.
I saw someone last night say that last night LeVar Ball officially transformed into the biggest heel in the history of sports. That's a hot take.
Well, they're about 3 months too late on that. I mean, he's been the biggest heel in sports for a long time.
Did Johnny Manziel, like, did I dream that he existed?
I don't know. LeVar Ball is more loud and in your face
than
Johnny Manziel. I think LeVar Ball, and that'd be a good discussion. I guess it's a good June 27th discussion, but I don't know. I think LeVar Ball may have taken the cake from Johnny Manziel.
No.
All right, I hate doing this, but I feel like we need to. K-State football talk when we come back.
Game time.
Time is now!
Driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go!
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
We are back here for hour two of the game, shortened today. We're out at 5:30 due to the Royals pregame with the Tigers. 6:10 for the first pitch tonight. Mitch will get you Brony of the weekend before that. We've got a two-parter here with some football coming up. I'll finish off that Texas take in regards to Athlon having Texas second in the Big 12. We had Mitch Light on in the first hour of the show from Athlon's College Football Preview Magazine. NewsRadioKMAN.com, the on-demand tab for the podcast of that. Plus, a little K-State football discussion as well. The game KMAN on Twitter. You can give us a call, 537-1350, 866-776-1350. We were watching the LeVar Ball on Rod during the break there. Best line of that whole thing, we missed and should have played. The Miz calling himself the Michael Jordan of WWE. That was awesome. That was great. That was the best part of the whole thing.
Is he your Michael Jordan of the WWE?
He is. Okay. Yeah, I think he's like MJ. Maybe we can go ahead and make Gallagher LeBron. How about that? Make those guys MJ and LeBron. All right, I mentioned just a minute ago, Athlon Sports, I did not realize until I started prepping for the interview with Mitch Light that they had picked Texas second in the Big 12. And while I don't think Texas is going to finish second in the Big 12, I think putting them, frankly, above Oklahoma State is foolish. Obviously, I think K-State is very good. I probably would not put Texas above any of the three that everybody considers the top. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, K-State, I think there's a reason that they're more or less the consensus there. But I think Texas could win 9 games, and I think Texas is a team that could challenge that group, and it's predominantly because they've got two things now, one much more debatable than the other. that they haven't had in a while. They have a quarterback in Shane Buechele, and that's the bigger part of it to me. I think the quarterback is more important than a head coach. We have that type of a debate a lot in sports, but to me, you get that quarterback, especially at a place like Texas where the talent level is going to almost take care of itself everywhere else. Give me that quarterback almost before I would take the head coach. I don't know where I necessarily stand on Tom Herman. I have heard differing opinions on both sides. Athlon, those guys, Mitch Light, they love Tom Herman, think he's fantastic. We had, for instance, Rob Cassidy on a couple weeks ago from Rivals.com, national recruiting guy. I would have thought he'd be the guy to come out and say, yeah, Tom Herman's great because he sees him on the recruiting front, which is where he really gets a lot of his reputation from, being a great recruiter. But he actually said, I think Tom Herman is grossly overrated. So you can find someone on either side that will say one thing or the other. But it's at least a fresh start. And with Charlie Strong, I think we kind of knew where that was headed. Mac Brown at the end of it, I think we knew where that was headed. One thing that Tom Herman has that Charlie Strong never had is full support from everybody. They love Tom Herman right now. It's all about Tom Herman. From the word go, Charlie Strong came in and there were Texas boosters doubting him. So he has more support, which at least is one feather in his cap, which would make me believe that this thing could go better than it did. I also think he's inheriting a better program, talent level-wise, right now than Mac Brown left for Charlie Strong when Charlie Strong took over. So I think you have a lot of reason to believe that this is more than just the usual yearly fodder for everybody that, oh, Texas is going to be good. Texas will be better because of that Longhorn logo on the side of the helmet. This is more than that this year for Texas. And I think if you're not willing to admit that, you are somewhat foolish.
I said in the last hour that I do believe in Tom Herman in the long term. I don't know if I would go so far as to say that, like, he's going to have Texas back to where they were in 2005, winning national championships. But believe in him as a guy that can rebuild and sustain Texas football. But when you look at this particular season, I do think that they're going to bring some of the glitz and glamour back. I do think that Texas's offense is going to be above average in the Big 12, certainly above average in the country. I like that offense, and Tom Herman is an offensive coach, so you know that he's going to have that going for him. But you have to look at some of the other factors here as well. Texas was 91st in the country last year in total defense. They were 90th in the country in scoring defense. And they were very young. They're going to bring back a lot of guys on their unit this year. But I just think it's giving them too much credit. It's giving Tom Herman too much credit to say that just because the guy on the sideline is Tom Herman instead of Charlie Strong, Texas is going to raise their defense to the level that it would need to be to finish second in the Big 12. And by that, I'm saying, you know, if you're going to be second in the Big 12, you probably got to be in the top 30 to 40 defensively at minimum. That's a big jump that Texas would need to make, and I just don't see it happening this year.
But you're saddling up Tom Herman with a quarterback in Shane Buechele who put up eye-popping numbers as a freshman.
Again,
seems like he's moving in the right direction. Like,
They'll have it on offense. They'll have the glitz and glamour. I just think that they're going to, you know, for them scoring 40 points a game, I think they're going to be giving up 33, 34 points a game.
I mean, they do play in the Big 12 where defense not all that prevalent. That's not typically how you really win. I mean, Oklahoma was winning with a high-flying offense with two Heisman finalists last year. And the quarterback thing, I mean, look at a team like Auburn. Like, I feel like Auburn's been in somewhat the same position as Texas. When they have had a quarterback here recently under Gus Malzahn, they've been great. Nick Marshall was awesome for him. When Gus Malzahn was running their offense with Cam Newton when he was there, they've been great. Otherwise, you know, they're pretty so-so. I think Texas has that type of a guy right now in Shane Buechele, and to me, that should be scary for the future, especially, but even this year, with him just in his sophomore campaign. You know, another thing that I will give you here, I think there is probably an aspect of, okay, we think Texas is good enough to compete up at the top. They probably hold the same type of an opinion that I do. But running a magazine when you are trying to compete against the Phil Steeles of the world and the Lindys of the world, all the different preseason college football preseason magazines there are, you know, maybe you say, hey, we think Texas is close there. Maybe if we just bump them into second, that gets people talking. All of a sudden, Mitch Light's doing an interview here, and I'm saying, man, you guys have Texas second. Like, what's that? That's the lead to the interview. That's the first question that I'm asking. So I think there could be an aspect of that at play here, too, where they're actually just exaggerating what their consensus opinion would be. Try and sell some magazines, generate some attention.
Something else that's been synonymous with Texas over this stretch that they haven't been very good is that they have had mental weakness. They have had these seasons where if things don't go well at the beginning, they will mail it in because the players there expect to win national championships and especially Big 12 championships. And once those are out of range, out of possibility, it's just not the same team. And I do think that Tom Herman can turn around that attitude a little bit. But again, that's something where getting his own players in there is going to help that more. They still definitely have some players that I would worry about from that standpoint. And their schedule, while they do get Oklahoma in the neutral site and then K-State and Oklahoma State at home, all of those are in the front half of their Big 12 schedule. They've got a five-game stretch where they play USC, K-State, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State. If they lose two or more out of those games, I really don't know what they're going to have left, what they're going to be using to get up for games at Baylor, at TCU, at West Virginia, stuff like that.
I don't know. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think that's a bit of a stretch to me.
Okay.
Plus, we're talking about the Big 12. I mean, I'd probably omit USC from that conversation. That could also work the opposite way. They win that USC game.
And then they're getting a giant boost. It happened against Notre Dame last year.
I know. USC is better than Notre Dame was. And again, this is new year, new program. There is a lot more excitement, I think, surrounding the team this year. I mean, I know that's the type of stuff that sounds like the same Texas stuff. So that's not the real basis of my argument here. Don't get me on that. Keep in mind, it's about the quarterback and the fact that they do just have a really solid amount of talent. And if Tom Herman is worth much at all, I think there's a good chance all of a sudden they're going to be 8-9 win team this year. No questions asked.
I think they're an 8-win team. I think they, you know, finish fourth, maybe third in the Big 12.
Well, okay. That was...
I'm taking that back, that was literally what I just said.
What are we arguing about here? We're really splitting hairs.
There's a huge difference between finishing fourth and finishing second in the Big 12. You know why? Because one goes to the Big 12 championship game.
Right. I was not arguing second, if you were paying attention. If you were referring to your notes from the beginning of this segment, I said I think they're third or fourth in the Big 12. I think they'll win nine games.
I'm not debating you here as much in this segment as I am Athlon's preview, where they picked Texas second and said, you know, Big 12 championship game, Oklahoma versus Texas, December, whatever. That's really what I'm getting at here. I'm saying why they shouldn't be second, not why they shouldn't be fourth.
Okay, I get it. But I don't think it's outlandish to say if they're at about the same spot I'm at, third, fourth in the Big 12, nine wins, then you just give them that extra bump up to second in the Big 12. I don't think that's a totally outlandish thing to do if they're already going to be in that tier and be in that
I'm not calling them crazy. I'm just saying that I disagree.
Do you think K-State will have a 1,000-yard receiver? Because I typically don't like to go with these Big 12 blog things as much as perhaps we used to late on them in the summer. But they've been doing a series about all these different statistical benchmarks. Who will be the 1,000-yard rushers in the conference? Well, now it's 1,000-yard receivers in the conference, and there is not a Wildcat to be found there, which my initial reaction was just like, well, of course. K-State's not really throwing the football around too much. Jesse Ertz did not break the 2,000-yard barrier throwing the football last year. I wouldn't think it's all that likely that K-State has a 1,000-yard receiver, but it's probably worth discussing. Byron Pringle had 631 yards receiving last year and finished the year hot. I'm sure there are those of you out there who would be offended in some ways that Byron Pringle is not on that list.
Take Isaiah Zuber out of the offense or take Dominique Heath out of the offense, take Carlos Strickland out of the offense, then yes, Byron Pringle is definitely a 1,000-yard receiver. But I've got enough respect for K-State's receiving core and the depth of it that I would say that we're probably looking more at a situation where you've got three different guys, maybe four different guys, that all fall in that 500 to 800-yard range.
This is a problem. He's got a couple things working against him. I do believe that the passing game is going to be a lot better this year, and I think Jesse Ertz with another year, a lot of pretty good wide receivers will improve the overall health of the passing game, and you'll see some numbers go up, but there are a lot of mouths to feed there, like you mentioned. I think Dominique Heath as a possession receiver, which sounds weird, but that's really almost what he became, a guy that they just use as almost an extension of the running game. Dominic Heath's going to catch a lot of balls. Isaiah Zuber has a lot of potential. So does Carlos Strickland, who has drawn just a ton of talk and certainly has the measurables to be in there as well. There's a lot of quality, capable receivers here. We've dealt with the Corey Sutton transfer saga. Why was he transferring? Because there is a lot of receiving talent on this team ready to play, ready to go in 2017. So even if he's going to be the leader, he's got that working against him. And just history works against him because the way this offense has really been generally engineered, unless Tyler Lockett's been there. I mean, that's been the one difference. The two-year span where Tyler Lockett was at the height of his powers, the offense was a lot different when he was the guy that you're building around. And I don't think Byron Pringle is on the level of Tyler Lockett, let's build around this guy. Because Tyler Lockett and Curry Sexton are the only guys to have 1,000-yard receiving seasons since Brandon Banks back in 2008 when Josh Freeman was slinging the football all over the yard. So the Sexton year was basically a byproduct of having this incredible stud out there in Tyler Lockett. So you can almost lump those two together as 1A, 1B. Outside of that, it's not really the way K-State runs the offense. So I think if you're playing the odds here, there's really no offense to K-State in saying that they are not going to have a 1,000-yard receiver.
And there's the factor that the K-State's running game, if it's anything like what it was last year, and if Alex Barnes is going to be as good or better than he was last year, K-State will probably be leading a lot of the time in their games, I think, and probably will not be looking to throw the ball around that much.
Well, I will say this. If history repeats itself and they at least like throw enough balls to Byron Pringle at 1,000 yards would be possible, Cole Manbeck and I may be pulling our hair out again.
Yeah.
Just like last year thinking like, why throwing the ball down the field?
It's my favorite part of,
football
of the show.
Season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 2015, 2016 redo there.
Yeah.
We'll get Mitch's Jabroni of the Week before we hand you off to the Royals next.
The jackpot.
That Jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow.
Is this Jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the Week.
And gentlemen, you always know I start with my three dishonorable mentions. First, I'm going to go to the NBA draft, and I'm going to pick on a little bit the number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz from Washington University. He was picked by the Philadelphia 76ers after a trade with the Boston Celtics. Well, after being selected number one overall, he's already being endorsed by certain companies, and he was supposed to make an endorsed post on Twitter, on Instagram,
and he screwed up
on his post because somebody had already obviously written out a post for him. He just needed to fill in the blanks like the city and the team name, and instead he tweeted out, and here's the first couple sentences of that Instagram post. Well, it started out with excited to head to city in quotation or in parentheses, I'm sorry, and join the team name in parentheses. He didn't fill in the blanks there, and man, he was roasted on Twitter and Instagram for that big mistake there. But
to be fair, I don't know if that's him or like he has someone in charge of his social
media.
Somebody's like running that.
No, he said later on he tweeted.
Oh,
out
okay,
and said,
that was him.
My mistake.
Okay,
he said I'm glad to be a part of the 76ers. So we'll go to UFC next. Big event in Oklahoma City this past weekend. They call it UFC Fight Night Oklahoma. Ended a little bit of in controversy in the main event between Kevin Lee and Michael Chiesa, as Kevin Lee had Chiesa in basically a rear naked choke. And it was getting towards the end of the first round. There was only about 20, 25 seconds left. And UFC referee Mario Yamasaki stepped in a little bit too early. He called the fight before Chiesa passed out or tapped out. He was still trying to fight out of this rear naked choke, and Yamasaki steps in and calls the fight off. Now, granted, Chiesa was probably getting ready to tap out. He was probably done.
The consensus here seems to be that, yes, it was called too early, but the outcome would not have been changed if he would have let it go.
Right. I mean, it was going to end up being some sort of either, choke out or, submission by Chiesa. But where I bring in the Jabroni of the Week portion of this was Dana White after the fight. He called out the referee, Mario Yamasaki, after the fight and just tore him a new one on social media. Didn't sound like, I don't think he did it in person, but he did it on social media to embarrass him and say, sir, you're too worried about doing your little heart hand gesture than the referee a fight. You screwed up another one, and he was completely obliterated on social media. So that's where he gets called out.
That's always a topic because if you err too far on the other side, then it's like, that gets dangerous. Like, I feel for him a little bit in that regard.
Next, my last dishonorable mention, going to call out Vince McMahon for even thinking about doing this LeVar Ball and the Ball family segment yesterday, which was an absolute train. As a wrestling fan, it just
boo.
Well, you got to think about where the WWE is right now. The ratings are really bad. It's not very good right now. Just because it's been
why like everybody wants to. Everybody like you may not admit it to yourself or not, but you gravitate towards the LeVar Ball stuff right now. Everybody loves to hate him.
But that's not going to bring the. I mean, it's going to bring the ratings back for one segment. It's not going to be a long term thing. You got to think long term, not short term. And Vince McMahon is out of touch. He's out of touch with what today's fans want. Should probably step aside.
What do they want? What do they want? What do you need to give them?
Well, I mean, everybody's a little bit different, but they don't need any more of these, you know, these cheesy gimmicks. You know, it needs to be more like reality TV. You know what? You know, kind of go with the times. I mean, it already is kind of like scripted reality TV, but it's still some pretty cheesy stuff that they go with, like bringing in LeVar Ball for
Raw,
a scripted segment.
Raw ratings were down last night from last week.
Well, there you go. So okay. They did nothing.
I stand corrected.
All right, but finally, my Jabroni of the Week this week, I'm going to bring up UFC again. It's going to be UFC fighter Justine Kish. During Saturday night's fight, she had a little bit of an unfortunate accident. She was in the process of as well of being choked out, and she had a little bit of an accident in the octagon, and I mean that literally, as in a bowel accident. She went number two in the in the octagon while being choked out, and it got all over the canvas. It was disgusting.
Oh man,
and
it's
very embarrassing. I understand, but she owned up to it later on Twitter. She said, "quote I am a warrior. I will never quit. I will never quit." #. Blank happens. Be back soon. But to get that out of the way before the fight.
Yeah.
Not good.
I like the way that was handled afterwards. But still very jabroni worthy.
I hear that and it just makes me want to go watch that George Brett video on YouTube. So good.
No thanks. I could do without all of that, to be completely honest with you. We'll be with you until 5:30 once again tomorrow. Check out the podcast, newsradiokman.com, the On Demand tab. Search the game KMAN on the podcast app on iTunes.